Welcome to the Mummy Dearest Podcast, a podcast about the Mummy movie, and that's it.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Mummy Dearest Podcast, where we unwrap your darkest desires from the 90s, 2000s, and today. We are your hosts.
Sorry. I didn't know how long it was going to go.
You're you. That was your cue.
No, I'm Sloan Steele and you are?
Zach Mellon.
Hi, Zach.
Hey, Sloan. Welcome back. Let's welcome back, everybody.
So we kind of decided that this is our last Mummy podcast. I mean, I guess we could do Mummy 3 if we wanted to, if the people like demand it.
If the people want it, I'm ready.
Yeah, we're ready. We're standing by, but we don't really want to talk about Maria Bello for an hour.
So over the pandemic, I tried to watch it and I got 10 minutes in and was like, I don't think I can do this.
Yeah. It was honestly Mummy 2 was kind of hard for me.
I watched it late at night and I was like, this is long.
It's long. It's 2 hours and 9 minutes long.
I know, but I'll tell you, there are some moments.
There are definitely moments and we're going to get to that. But so we decided as the captains of the ship, as the leader of this army, we're going to just kind of deep dive movies from the 90s and the aughts that have shaped us into who we are. So we decided that next week we're going to talk about Showgirls. I can get all these podcasts up in time for people to get a watch of Showgirls. So, because I'd love to be able to have like audience interaction. So maybe we should wait to do Showgirls to our fourth show. And maybe our third show should be, we'll pick something else so that people have enough time to watch Showgirls and we can, you know, field questions the audience might have.
I think that's a great idea.
We'll see what happens. Probably nothing. We'll probably be six podcasts in before one of them is uploaded. It's okay. We'll have them in the bank.
You know what? But then it'll give Elizabeth Berkley some time to be a guest on the show.
Okay. So I know we're not talking about Showgirls yet, but if you guys have not watched Saved by the Bell, the new Saved by the Bell on Peacock, I highly recommend it. Okay. Zach, it's good.
Okay. And
I know that sounds crazy.
No, I wanted to watch it. I just actually forgot about it.
It's woke Saved by the Bell. There's trans characters. There's
a really funny trans character in that show, actually.
Yes.
That was in another show that I watched that was so funny.
Yeah. What is her name? She's fantastic.
I forget. I don't know. I just know that she's wicked funny. Yeah.
She's amazing. She's so good. And the main character on the new Saved by the Bell is Zach Morris's son. So it's really good. I cried. AC Slater apologizes for his misogyny during the show to Elizabeth Berkley because Elizabeth Berkley works at the school. And I'm not going to lie to you. I cried.
He's like, hey, mama.
He does say, hey, mom. And she's like, actually, it's hey, Professor Spano hey, Dr. Spano. Like it is. It always was. Yeah. Anyway, so he's the PE coach. Duh. It's great. I got to tell you, it's great. Zach, if you're in bed.
No, I believe.
Here's the thing. You're in bed late at night. You need a show to fall asleep to. It's one of those. Like, it's just going to tuck you in. Like, it's like a weighted blanket. You know what I'm saying?
Did you watch Fuller House?
I got through the very first episode of Fuller House. I
can't believe I'm going to say this in a public forum, but I've watched literally every episode. But
wow. I mean,
I know we'll have to edit that out.
No, it's okay. I'm definitely leaving it in. I found it too dark.
It is. I know. We're spiraling into a weird place here.
We haven't even touched upon the mummy yet, but let's go into Fuller House while we're here.
I found it dark in a really interesting way and nobody else understood it. So I'm here for it. And if anyone's listening and wants to talk about it, let's go. I'm here.
I think we'll do another podcast, maybe 10. We'll do a Fuller House deep dive. So people can, because I need to watch the whole thing where it took
Michelle
me
never
out.
Showed up.
Okay. We're going to very briefly, because I think this is going to become, we want this podcast to become about issues that matter to us today.
Yeah.
We're watching movies from the 90s through the lens of two people that loved them back then as kids, but now we're watching it as adults who I think we're on the right side of history because we're on the left.
I would say so. Yeah.
So we're watching these things with the lens of, hey, this is not right. This is not right. And so what I didn't like, people were really mad Michelle didn't come back to Fuller House. But here's the thing. Those kids were cast against, like, they didn't have any agency. They were babies.
So then they were literally actors against their will.
Yeah. So then to get mad that they didn't want to come back to do this member berry show when they're literally billionaires is like, don't get fucking mad at them. They didn't do anything wrong. Like,
literally, it probably destroyed their lives. Yeah.
Like, they're fucking busy. Get out of here. Anyway, that's my defense of the Olsen twins. God love them. Shall we now?
Justice for the Olsen twins. All right, let's get into it. This is a justice podcast.
So today we're bringing, I don't really know if there's much justice to bring to The Mummy 2, The Mummy Returns.
I would disagree because I don't think The Mummy Returns gets enough credit for the female badassery that takes place in this movie.
There is a lot of female badassery. I'm going to give you that. What I'm going to take away from you is a quote from Roger Ebert, which I didn't know I read so much Roger Ebert, but I guess when I was just Googling, you know, reviews of this movie to see what the pulse was back then, he said that The Mummy Returns was like being on a roller coaster for 2 hours. And no one wants that.
Wow.
He also said no good movie has ever featured a hot air balloon. And that is so accurate.
You know,
name one.
I literally can't.
You can't because they're all bad.
I just watched a movie like last year about there was like people in a hot, like stuck in a hot air balloon. And I like don't remember what movie it was. It was like a survival movie about someone who was like trapped in a hot air balloon or something. That was really bad.
How did they film that? Was it just like close ups of everybody's face?
It was 100% CGI.
Like, how do you film that? Was it like a true story?
I need to find
out
what movie that was. Was that a dream? I feel like I watched it at my friend's house and it was like, they were like trapped. They were like going on an adventure. They were, anyway, let's.
Okay, I'm not going to lie. That does sound like a dream.
That was a fever dream.
Yeah, that was 100%
maybe I did have
dream.
COVID. I don't know.
That was not, like, I've never heard of that movie.
Okay, yeah. You're right.
It was called like Basket Heads. Like, what was it? No, that's not a real movie.
Okay.
Anyway, so that's what Roger Ebert had to say, that it was like being on a roller coaster for 2 hours. I would call it a sapphic roller coaster for 2 hours.
Everything in this movie was so they took the first movie and everything that was like a big deal in the first movie, they made like the tiniest. So if we recall these, remember the scarab beetles were like, no one could control them. They were killing people. They were like running from them. Literally within the first 10 minutes of this movie, thousands of them erupt from the ground and they just like get rid of them. It's like totally normal and fine. It's like fine.
It's like, okay.
They raise him from the dead within 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, whereas it took half the movie last time. Yeah. They were just like, get rid of all of this.
Get rid of it. Like, that's the thing, that the things that I loved about The Mummy, all of them were taken out of The Mummy too. Like, there was no, there was like no plot. Was there a plot? It was very loose.
It was very loose. And I feel better being negative because I do have a lot of good things to say about it. But
listen, this is like this is a he said, she said forum. I mean, you can have any stance you want. There are definitely things I loved about this film, but on the whole, it left me not as happy as I was.
It was bizarre. It was bizarre.
The choices were
bizarre. It's a bizarre. Now, I guess we should just maybe do like a 30-second recap. But like, if anyone hasn't seen it, basically what happens is they have a son now. He gets kidnapped because he's wearing a bracelet that the bad guys want to raise an army to conquer the world. That old chestnut.
The end.
Basically,
and
the end.
Anaxunamun and Imhotep are still trying to reunite, as always.
Now, something that I took away from this is that Anaxunamun is like a badass bitch. Like, she is like out for herself. She's like, I'm taking care of myself. I don't give a fuck about all these men.
HBIC.
Now, all these men were working for her. Mm-hmm. So I don't know anything about this director, but
I only know that he also directed Van Helsing. That's all I know.
And it was 2001, which is the same year that Lara Croft Tomb Raider came out. So it was kind of like the year of the gun-wielding woman.
It was. It was a year. And I mean, 2001 was a big year for everything.
It was a big year. And these women, everyone worked for these women on this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They did. That's
true. Anoxinamun was the HBIC to all these like dumb and competent men.
Mm-hmm. Always.
Which I've never noticed. I think this was the first time I've watched this movie post Me Too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Interesting.
So that was awakening.
That was an awakening for sure. You were
Evelyn kind of like, all of a sudden knows how to use multi-automatic weapons.
Okay. We definitely need to address this.
I feel like scattered because there's a lot that I feel like needs to be talked about.
Well, let's go. So I have like a pretty loose list. I just kind of wrote down I watched the film, I just sort of like wrote down things about it. So you guys have the plot. We're not going to what we did on the first podcast. If you're listening to this one first and not the first one first, that's a confusing sentence, is we described the plot of The Mummy for an hour and got 10 mm-hmm. minutes in.
Mm-hmm.
In this podcast, we just told you a loose plot, and now we're just going to assume you've seen this movie, and so thus we can just tell you things about it.
Yeah.
Like mm-hmm. the first thing, my first note is rocks, smooth armpits.
Okay, I'm What's mad going? That I didn't write that down, but I noticed that as well. And I was like ready to text someone and be like, do you think The Rock always shaves his armpits?
Okay, so my dad shaves his armpits and okay. it's not okay because he's hairy everywhere else except for his armpits.
I wonder, now we need to get him on the podcast because.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
I need to know like the choices behind that. So. So this was also The Rock's breakout role.
Yes. Oh, so in the
first role,
the Roger Ebert review I read, it talked about The Rock's acting and it says, even though he was CGI, I do think he still has a chance of a career ahead of him.
And here we are.
I mean,
78,000 Rock movies under our belt.
Living under the Rock's shadow. We are the third rock from the sun. Like
we are
truly.
When people say
that's not even
people say you're living under a rock. Like, yeah, we are.
We are living under a rock. We're living under the rock. I mean, yeah. my mom literally will just send me if there's like a new Rock post. She's like, did you see the Rock's post? Like she has like the alert set for him and Kevin Hart. She's got the combo.
Okay. That's a buddy cop movie.
She ready claims to go. They were in a buddy cop movie.
I know. I just realized that after I said that.
I think it was called, I don't know what it was called. This is such a good film podcast. But yeah, my mom will listen to this and let me say my mom does claim she does not remember setting up alerts for Kevin Hart. But every time I have her phone in my hand, I see a Kevin Hart alert. So that's, you know, she can come on the podcast.
You gotta do what you gotta do. Yeah.
If you need Kevin Hart news, you need Kevin Hart news. Okay. So smooth armpits.
Where else are you going to get it? Smooth armpits. So speaking of smooth body hair.
Yes.
I think it's coincidental that I also found that Arnold Vosloo, who plays mm-hmm. Imhotep.
So smooth.
He shaved his body multiple times a day for this role.
He had a professional shaver on set to just kind of like a groomer literally. To just whiz him up and down with a razor.
Whiz him up and down. It was like cut, go to the trailer.
Cut, shave. We got to do a quick blade. How did he
him and The Rock shaved their armpits together? I'm sure. I'm assuming.
So the thing is, I've never seen my dad actually shave his armpits, but I see them. And when I was little, I'm sorry, this is such a veer, but when I was little and boys in my class started getting armpit hair, I was like, why is their hair long under their arms?
That's
like
so
I had seen other people with armpit hair, but I don't know why I didn't, like, I never really registered.
You were like
with
freaks.
Me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, it's really weird. My dad has like my dad got electrolysis in the 1960s on his eyebrows.
That's adventurous.
I'm going to have to send you a pic. I think we just need to have my dad on here to kind of talk about grooming habits. There's a lot of stuff to unpack.
That's really adventurous.
Yeah. All right. So whatever. Rock smooth armpits. Not period correct. There's a lot of period incorrect costuming choices in this film.
That is an understatement.
Do we go there? Do we talk about how The Rock's entrance into this movie is, again, an unexplained battle? There's so many unexplained battles in these movies.
That's also what I was, like, we don't know what this battle is, but it also took place in 3000 BC. So I think that they were just like, put it so far back that nobody even cares
I don't know what was going on back then.
And basically, it's just so we can find out that he is the Scorpion King, which yielded, I think, like 5 movies after this, which I don't think we're going to get into, but
good for him.
I think one of the most important things that I have to say is that I was accepted into the following friendship of the kid who plays Alex O'Connell, who is Rick and Evelyn's son. So immediately I wanted to know what happened to him, right? Mm-hmm. He's been in like two movies.
Wow.
That were not actual movies. And then
like the hot air balloon movie that was started in your head.
So his name is Freddie Both. Okay. There is a Stan account on Instagram of him and like 8 pictures of just him playing Alex O'Connell.
Oh my God.
And it looks like he has a child now. He's not an actor.
How does he look?
He looks good. Okay. He looks like he's married and has a child. And he only has like 2,000 followers. So, I mean, I'm definitely going to get him on this podcast.
What's his name again?
Freddie, and then Boath. I friended him the night I watched The Mummy Returns.
Oh my God. It just says followed by Zach Mellon.
Yeah, that's it. There's like,
okay.
Freddie so Booth. Don't worry, everybody. I will slide into those DMs for the public.
I think I would hope he would be happy to come on this show.
I'm not sure what other shows he's being asked to come on, but I think
this would be it.
I think this would be it.
Be so like, we're just super fans. Tag him or I don't know.
Tag him or whatever you need to do.
Go to his house. Just show up.
It looks like he's in England somewhere in the countryside. So I'm sure we can just get there after COVID's done.
Not right now, but after for sure.
After COVID.
So you friended Freddie. You're cultivating Freddie. That friendship.
Yep. Just give me a couple days and we'll be back. I'll give you an update.
Are you really going to DM him?
I don't see why not.
What are you going to say?
I'm going to say, hey, buddy.
Okay, good start.
Loved your work in The Mummy Returns. We've got a really successful podcast.
Where, no one's heard it, but
we're fielding calls from Brendan, Rachel.
We've said no.
And we've said no because we want you.
Yeah. We've said not until Freddie comes on and shares his truth. Yeah,
exactly.
I want to know what it's like. Here's the thing about The Mummy Returns was that I wanted Brendan Fraser to be my husband and also my dad. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Yes, 100%. And also
I want to fuck him, but I want him to be my parent.
Uh-huh. And that's maybe something that you can
for my therapist.
I was just going to say that's something that you can talk about in therapy and they'll probably be like, yeah, another person.
Enough. I'm going to file this away in the Brendan Fraser Mummy Returns file daddy issues.
So I totally get that because they were parents now and he was basically, I mean, when he went missing, when their son from the movie went missing, they were like mad for like a minute or two. And then they were like totally fine and like ready for an adventure.
They seemed okay with it. It was almost all right.
There's a scene when they're going to that like hot air balloon guy and they're like trying to convince him to take them on this adventure. And Evelyn is like in the background with her hands in her pockets, like leaning up against like a pillar. And casual. I'm like, why does she look so relaxed?
She's just like
in her duster and like her button down linen shirt.
Okay. So where do we start? Should we talk about let's very quickly talk about the clothing choices. Okay. When we see, I mean, the first clothing we see is The Rock and he's like basically just naked. His eyebrows are Evelyn thin, Mummy One Evelyn thin.
Thin.
Thin, thin, sharp eyebrows. Then we see Brendan. And I said, Brendan is hot, but he has a little dad bod and it's somehow sexier. I want Brendan Fraser to be my dad, but I also want to have sex with him? ? Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Then I wrote, Evelyn is very self-assured, but she's also dressed head to toe in Chico's. She looks like my Nana. Is any of that clothing period correct?
No, she's literally she went to Ann Taylor Loft outlet.
She sure did.
And she bought a tank top and a cardigan.
She sure did.
And stuck her straight leg pants into some boots and went on a hike. Into some
like fry boots. I mean, like literally.
Yep. And with a heel too. So she's like, I'm going on an adventure. I'm definitely going to put my heels on like these.
Just a little, like a little heeled boot. Like she was in Practical Magic, another movie we should cover on this podcast. Obviously. I mean, it's canon for my like queer self. Okay. But wait a second. I need to go back to Evelyn for a moment because if you haven't seen the movie, I want to describe this more. It literally is like a chevron stripe sheer tank top. Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, if my friend Becky is listening, I want everybody to know that in I guess the year 2019, Becky took me to the mall and she took me to an Ann Taylor loft and she tried to make me buy like a fitted tank top camisole. And I was like, we're not going to be friends anymore after this. If you like, I'm not buying this.
She was inspired by the Mummy Returns.
I think that's what she was trying to outfit me in. Mm-hmm. And then Evelyn has like bangles pushed up on the arm.
Yeah.
And then the hair is it's a very deep side part, loose mm-hmm. wave. Now, I guess they're trying to say
heavy eye makeup.
Oh my God. A smoky eye. Not a well constructed smoky eye. It's like how you would do your makeup if you're a girl in like seventh grade, where it's just like eyeliner in a ring.
You got an eighth grader to do it for you.
Yeah, that's how she looked. And then I guess they were trying to say, oh, she's doing like a Katharine Hepburn, like, I don't care, I'm gonna wear pants kind of thing. But
I liked the pant. I mean, yeah.
But it was just like not period correct at all.
It wasn't period correct at all. I was glad that she was in pants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
for the whole movie.
That's good. Except for one pivotal scene, which we'll get to.
When you say pivotal, okay, yeah, because
pivotal. We need to build up to that. We can't get there.
I know.
Rick's in the same outfit from the first movie. I don't even know if he's
same
changed.
Outfit the whole movie. In that teal. Although I will say, like, he looks really good in that teal scarf, like that teal handkerchief.
It brings out his eyes.
It really does. And his like sun-kissed skin.
The tan on that skin is...
It's like real. It's not sprayed on.
No, that's like an iconic skin color tan.
I know.
Like,
and I wrote... good. I think I wrote Rick's intro shot, baby face. We're in like this weird, like, it's the intro shot for him is like this Boris Karloff dark Egyptian hallway. And all we see is like his silhouette through like a huge spider web or something. And then he like turns and like rips the spider web down and his baby face is revealed and his like beautiful eyes.
That spider web was such a weird texture. I wrote that down. What is the texture of that web?
It was like the spider webs that you put on your bushes.
Yeah.
At Halloween.
On my tree right now because my son wanted the spooky birthday. So it looked like that. Okay. I actually wrote something about the set decoration. Let me see here. Okay. I said, I'm only saying this because I'm currently rewatching The Girls Next Door. A lot of the scenes here look like they take place on like a Playboy set, like Egyptian Playboy set or a jungle Playboy set. Yeah. It's like, it's sexy.
Basically the set of Congo. Yeah.
It's the set of Congo. It's like steamy and sexy and everything's just like, I mean, I guess it's supposed to look like a ride. Again, you're on a 2-hour roller coaster.
And that's what I do appreciate. So like, that is what I do appreciate about these movies is that they don't try to make these sets like super realistic.
No.
The sand was clearly, the sand was clearly sifted and like brought in and
I love
perfectly
that sand.
Placed.
That
like,
sand all
the
looks
sand
so
is,
nice.
Oh my God, I could roll around.
Ugh. Okay. So I just want to, one more thing about Evelyn's outfit, because it kind of was giving me like PTSD. I used mm-hmm. to be a manager at Anthropology, obviously.
Wow.
I know, guys. Thank you. Round of applause.
Wow. Woo,
she did it. She's a white woman manager at Anthropology. It was a mess. Anyway, when our district manager would come in and do, or like the regional manager would come in to do a tour of the store, it was literally in Evelyn's outfit. Like when Evelyn's at home and she puts on like that overcoat kind of thing, like the checkered overcoat.
Yeah.
Over the chevron stripes and the jewelry and the bangles.
Yeah.
I was literally like getting nervous because it was the district manager coming in to be
She was coming in and you hadn't cleaned anything. The fitting rooms were disgusting.
Sizes were not organized. Like nothing was.
The floor set had not been complete.
Oof, the Voluspa candles were not lit.
Oh, forget it.
I mean, no, we lit those things literally at 6 o'clock in the morning. So the store smelled like that. I can't smell an Anthropology without getting like sick to my stomach.
I worked at Hollister and Abercrombie and Fitch for 5 years. So you don't have to tell me about smells giving me PTSD.
Wait a second. Have we discussed this?
I don't think we have. And I could probably do an entire podcast about working there.
Okay. Tell the audience how like my jaw just dropped.
Okay. Yeah, ask me anything you need to know.
Okay. At Hollister, mm-hmm. do they give you a flashlight when you work there so you can see what you're doing?
No, your eyes just adjust and then you like can't go out during the day.
You become a vampire. You can't see
anything.
Really
quick, this was like from 2005 to 2009 or 2004, whatever, I forget.
Oh my God. That's like peak
Hollister. It was peak Hollister. It was before any human resources rules. We were forced to wear flip-flops. Girls couldn't wear makeup. We had to, I mean, and then you're literally putting like 16 to 20 year olds in a store with no rules. And the manager is like 24. And
so drunk.
I am not going to get into the things that happened or did not happen, but.
No, we're doing a whole separate podcast about your time in Hollister.
It was a lot. It was a lot, guys.
You went from Hollister to Abercrombie?
It was like, it was the same company. So we'd like bounce back and forth. And like, there were like parties where like everyone would get together. And it was just like this weird, I'm just saying a lot of people have babies from
those days. I'm going to tell you something that is like so shameful. And I'm so sad right now. I applied to work at Abercrombie and I did not get hired.
I mean, listen, the interview process was really rigid when we had to, like, you had to sit in a circle and have a group interview. And we had to ask you things like, what kind of kitchen appliance would you be? Like if.
Okay. So I made it to, I guess it was like a small group interview and I'll never, as long as I live, forget this moment of my life because the manager who was interviewing us said, okay, final question. What's my name? And I didn't remember their fucking name.
It was probably Chad.
I should have said Chad, but I was like, I don't remember your name. And they said to me, that's the most important part of any interview. We're sorry, we can't hire you. And to this day, I can never remember anybody's name. So I didn't learn anything, but like I was like, wow. So now whenever I meet someone in my head, I'm just saying, remember their name. So I don't actually hear their name ever.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So that's my Abercrombie story. Do you still smell like Abercrombie? Is it like still in your pores?
Sometimes I get a whiff of it and I like twitch. Like I,
that is like so crazy.
We had huge bottles of like perfume or cologne that we had to spray constantly through the store.
Oh my God. I have a headache. I literally have like a sense memory headache speaking about Abercrombie.
Yeah,
how do you work there?
I don't know. It was, I mean, it was a blast, but no one wants to hear about this.
I think they do.
I'm sure they do, but they're here for.
Yes. Okay. I'm so sorry, guys. It was
no. Yeah, guys.
It was a sidetrack. Okay. My next note. Let's bring it back to Mummy. Is the chemistry that Brendan Fraser and Evelyn have is unparalleled. Their kisses.
They're so soft and tender.
I just wrote the softest kisses.
It's just like so. I know. I wonder what their relationship is like now because you just like don't hear much about either one of them in the press.
No, they're very private. And it's crazy because Rachel Weisz is married, or Veit, whatever her name is married to Daniel Craig. You would think they'd be.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They'd be up in the press, but they're not.
I know they're not. And I think I know I'd love to know what they think of each other because it seemed like I think that they loved each other.
I think that they had like.
That scene at the end.
Zach, I wrote down, I cried. I was literally crying.
I've seen this movie probably 100 times and I've never cried at it until I just watched it.
Me too. That's so weird. What? That's so weird. Zach, I swear
it
to God,
it has to be COVID or something because I was like, I know. And I know what happened. Like I know how the movie ends and I was like crying.
Cause Imhotep's look was like, I'm getting choked up right now. It was like so heartbreaking.
I literally wrote at like the last thing I wrote was like Imhotep literally does everything for Anak Sunamun and she runs away when he needs her. And then I said, we see him sad and heartbroken. He essentially gives up and lets go.
Honestly, like I'm really getting like teary-eyed right now. It was so emotional.
It was so, I'm like, sorry, everybody, that we're jumping like wildfire.
Cause but,
like,
he looks over at Evelyn. I have chills. He looks over Evelyn. The pyramid is crashing.
And it's crashing.
And Rick is like, go Evelyn, go. Evelyn has just come back to life, by the way.
She's just come back to life.
And he's like, go, Evelyn, go. And she's like, no, I'm helping you, which is, as a mom,
I have chills.
Irresponsible because it's like your child needs help.
Then your child's going to have no parents, but they have Jonathan.
Would you want your child to be raised by Jonathan?
I am Jonathan. Like, I have never related to someone more in a movie than Jonathan, I don't think.
But he comes in the clutch.
He comes in the clutch. So Evelyn is, and now, mind you, I did learn a little that Rachel, whatever her last name is, because she saw how damaged Brendan Fraser's body was by these movies, she wrote in her contract that she would not run through a collapsing building. So they had to CGI. I know. So everything had to be CGI'd because she refused to run through the building.
Makes sense.
I know. So,
Was Brendan Fraser getting like pelted by falling debris?
I read something.
You said in the last podcast he was held together by glue.
So I read something that says Brendan Fraser suffered major injuries, torn spinal discs, cracked ribs, severe damage to his knees, and he turned down multiple action roles due to the pain. Oh my God, are you okay? Oh my God, you guys.
Oh my God. I'm okay. Can you repeat that line so I can cut that out? I'm fine. Everything's fine. Just gonna... wow.
So we're just trying to collect ourselves here for a moment.
Okay, so I'm gonna take that again. So what did you read about Brendan Fraser?
I read that it says Brendan Fraser suffered major injuries. Major injuries, a torn spinal disc, cracked ribs, severe damage to his knees, and turned down multiple action roles due to the constant pain that he was in for a decade following these movies.
So he like lost out, like his career ended because of The Mummy. Like he could have been an action star, but he just...
I guess they wanted him to be like an action star and he couldn't do it.
But here, okay, this is going to sound fucked up, but like how is Tom Cruise?
He seems a little off though.
I mean, is Scientology like keeping him together? Because like, how come he does like all of his own stunts and Brendan Fraser can't? I mean, I guess Brendan Fraser was really like pelted with shit.
I wonder if Brendan Fraser's a Pisces because I am a Pisces.
His birthday.
And I think that he seems like a little sensitive. Like,
he does.
He seems like a little baby bird in a good way.
Brendan Fraser birthday. Let's see. No, interesting. December 3rd. I think he's a Sag. Yeah, right?
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
December 3, Zodiac. It's Sagittarius. I'm sorry. I don't know why I say that.
Brendan Fraser got hurt on set. Okay, anyway.
But he's coming.
So anyway, so Brendan Fraser's career was basically ruined by The Mummy. So Evelyn was like, not on my watch. Back to what we were talking about. She's running through this collapsing building after he's like, no, please save yourself and save our son. And she jumps and leaps. She grabs a hold of him. Imhotep looks to his right to see this beautiful couple and their tender kisses.
And they're looking at like, him like so sad.
I know. Then they almost feel bad for him, but they're like, we need to let him die. And then he looks over and he's like, Anak Sonamun. And then she's like, Nai!
Nai! Nai!
And then she runs away like, fuck him.
She did say like, please don't go in there at first.
In her defense, she was like, don't go in. And honestly, maybe she should have said, don't go in because I'm not going to help your ass when something happens.
Yeah, like if you go into if you're hanging on to the pit of lava bodies, I'm not going to come in.
I'm not doing this.
But also, what would she have grabbed onto? Because Brendan had on the leather holster. So
it's true.
And Evelyn was able to get him.
He had nothing but his smooth,
oiled up skin.
So the other thing I wanted to say was that had just been shaved. But like the other thing is like, yes, does he have a great body? Of course he does. But I want to say like he does not have like
the body.
And I appreciate that. Like, I appreciate that they let him have no six pack. That's what I'm saying. Like, thank you, producers, directors, whoever was in charge of like allowing this man to just like be himself with no body hair. But like,
I mean, no body hair. He was stealing the bodies from other people, but like totally the skin from other people and whatever.
Which
but
I think is what Jennifer Lopez does to stay so beautiful.
What's going on there?
She's Imhotep in female modern form.
There is something about Jennifer Lopez that I hate so much, and it's very specific. It is her bedazzled tumbler that she carries with her everywhere.
That's disgusting. Does she live near you or does she live in LA?
She lives near me. I don't know what she's doing now because she and A-Rod are splitting up.
I know.
But we'll see. Although I have friends in the industry here in Miami, and they said that their relationship is so fucking weird. Like he just like stands at the side and like watches her everywhere she goes. He's like with her.
Yeah, like I'm not surprised.
Not surprised. But I did like whenever I'm like a red carpet and it's like there's gonna be 9 million like Getty / Rex, not Rex my son, but like Rex the photography agency photos of J-Lo, and A-Rod is there like a dad like taking pictures of her.
I know, it's cute. cute, but
that was cute, but he's also a fucking creep. Jose Canseco. Wow, this really took a turn.
Let's
go where we need to go. Jose Canseco has been saying for the last 3 or 4 years, A-Rod and J-Lo are not going to make it. A-Rod is cheating on J-Lo. A-Rod's a terrible person. J-Lo, come to me. Also, dear listeners, if you don't follow Jose Canseco on Twitter, I don't know what you're doing, because it's the best.
Is he losing it publicly?
Losing it. He's been losing it for years. He literally talks about aliens and ghosts, which are all things I love. Not shitting on that, but it's a lot. Anyway, neither here nor there. Let's go back.
You guys, I don't know. We can't keep it together.
I'm so sorry. It's my fault. I am really.
No, it's not your fault. I'm the one who said J-Lo.
It's Jose Canseco's fault. Okay. So we were talking about the ending and it's very sad, very tragic.
What I want to go back to. I want to get back to the home invasion scene.
Okay. We definitely need to go back there. I'm hoping you're going to bring up Ardeth Bay's line, but go back.
I'm going to bring up Ardeth Bay from now on until the end of this. Okay. So something that, now really quick, they get home from this initial excursion and the bad guys know where they live. They invade their home to get what they want from these people. And
is their home a beautiful museum, or is it just because they love artifacts?
It's actually an English country home that exists, but they just throw it with all their artifacts.
Okay.
Perfect. Now these people break in, and I think my favorite line almost of any movie, and it's not artists, but it's when that guy, I have his name written down somewhere.
The main baddie.
The bad guy, like the big muscular black guy.
Mm-hmm.
He makes himself appear out of nowhere. And Evelyn looks up and she goes, "Get out of my house." And he's like, imagine he was like, "Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, sorry.
Oh my God, my bad.
I'm sorry. This is your house?" Anyway, so, and then.
It's so good.
Evelyn is in this low cut, high slit, black, sexy gown, dress for traveling, obviously.
Yes, that's what you wear when you travel.
And she turns around, walks over, and takes out these huge swords from this statue in her living room.
It's like katanas.
And is ready to battle this motherfucker. It is that's the first time that I was like, this is the sexiest scene
I wanted to see. I mean, she brings those out again. And I love that Alex, her son, is like, "I don't think that's a good idea, Mom." It's all very quippy. If what was happening in that scene was happening to me, I would be screaming my head off. But I guess these people are much cooler.
So then he goes, and then she kicks this guy's ass, and her son goes, "Where did you learn to do that?" And that's where we kind of get into this very subtle, not so subtle, she's an ancient Egyptian woman.
Right.
Being played by a white woman.
We should have mentioned she is, come to find out she's Nefertiti.
She is the daughter of the pharaoh who was murdered in the first movie. Anyway,
obviously. So that happens.
So then she says, "I don't know where I learned how to fight like that." And then she headbutts this guy and goes, "That I learned from your father," which I always thought was
so cute.
So cute.
So cute. There's a lot of headbutts and a lot of references to headbutts.
So that was to compare that, what I thought was the sexiest thing ever, mm-hmm. was to see this badass woman looking beautiful, sword fighting, kicking. And then all of a sudden we get this even sexier sword fight between these two. So then Ardeth Bay appears. And if you want to what was the line?
Okay. So Ardeth Bay, which I was high when I wrote this, but I'm going to stand by this. I wrote Ardeth Bay, more like Ardeth Bay, B-A-E.
You didn't even have to spell it
Should I tweet that?
I think that that's probably what you should tweet. And I think that I wanted to find out who choreographed these fight scenes, because
you were obsessed with them.
The best fight scene, the best parts of these movies were these fight scenes. And then we get sexy fight scenes later.
Oh, we have so many. Okay, but wait. So the line is, I literally wrote to myself, "Oh man," when Ardeth is inexplicably in their house and she says,
"Yeah,
what are you doing here?" And he says, "Explanations are best kept for later." It's amazing. And also the laziest writing. He's just there.
The writer was like, "How are we going to explain this?" And they were like, "Let's explain it later."
And then I don't think they ever do. Did they?
They don't. They just, so there's just the scene when the bad guys are in Egypt looking for Imhotep, and then they say that they need to go find the bracelet. bracelet.
You're really good at like watching a movie. I'm really good at like kind of watching a movie while also making dinner. And
well, you have like a lot, you have like other responsibilities that I don't have.
It's so fucking horrible.
So he like, and then you like see him in this. So he like was pretending to be working for an Anaxunamun. And like, yes. I think they might've added that later. So he knows that they are going to their house to attack them or whatever.
He's just kind of there.
There's a reason. Yeah, exactly.
There's no security or no locks anywhere at this house.
Anywhere.
Whatever. Okay, so I wrote after this, I said, this movie is more horror movie-y than the first Mummy, I thought. Like, there's more, like, horror aspects.
Yeah,
I get stuff. That. More gross stuff happens. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah. I just thought that was a note. And then I wrote, Evelyn's flashback blinky face is so funny. When, like, the memories of Nefertiti wash over her, she does this thing where she's just, like, closes her eyes and, like, moves her head back. It's so
yeah,
stupid.
She has like a, it's like the, her first year acting school and they were like, okay, have a flashback. And she's like, oh. It's almost like when it's like her jeans like rubbed the wrong way and she was like, whoa, like
literally that is the face. It's so like, ooh, weird because yeah. she is as turned on as the audience will become. That's the point. Oh my God. Should we just like get into that?
Should
scene?
We just get into, I think we should, because we're clearly not going in any sort of order.
No.
So we, you know,
I don't even
so
know they, how we find out that she's Nefertiti. I guess I forget what happened.
It's that, I think it is the fight scene.
Oh yeah. But I don't remember how they got there. Whatever. Who cares?
So They're on this dirigible, this hot air balloon.
Oh my God, yes. Let's
and
even.
She's like looking out into the whatever, the unknown
desert.
Land.
Who knows?
And all of a sudden,
where are they? Who knows?
Who knows? And she has like this weird orgasm face. And all of a sudden we're flashed back to ancient Egypt. Mm-hmm. And we're in this like fighting ring auditorium where the pharaoh is watching Anaxunamun and this like mystery woman fight each other.
They
in
have
minimal
masks
clothing.
On. Masks and like a mesh skirt. Like a mesh.
It's mesh bras, like bikini tops. It's really degrading, but it's like.
It's really good.
It's really good. So
it's really good. It's good fighting. If you're, it's no matter how you identify sexually, it's really good. Doesn't
and
matter.
And like neither one of us know how to even explain that. So like, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's like as a 14-year-old boy watching this, I was like.
How do I feel? And anyway, also it was the pharaoh. So Imhotep is standing next to the pharaoh and like everyone's horny. Like. The pharaoh's watching everyone. His daughter and his mistress, but then Imhotep is watching like the hot, sexy daughter and his girlfriend. I mean, it's like a thing. And the faces, his like, if I was watching my son fight like a hot guy to the death, I wouldn't be sitting there like, ooh, I'm horny. I'd be like, what? Like, this is really scary.
This is scary. Like, my son could die.
My son could die. I'm not like, ooh, yeah. Ooh,
yeah. Like, let's, I can't wait to get, anyway. So, that's what I think is, so anyway, I don't know where we're going, but so they fight and then she initially gets defeated, like Evelyn as Nefertiti or whatever her name is. She gets defeated and she rips her mask off and we find out that it's Evelyn's ancestor.
That is just Evelyn.
And it's really just Evelyn. But the thing is like, yeah, is she just a white British actress playing an ancient Egyptian? Sure.
Very Liz Not Taylor a, as Cleopatra.
Very Liz Taylor. She had like the eye make, like the Egyptian eye makeup. And she says something in ancient Egyptian, which you could like with a British accent. So she's yeah. like, I wish that I could like repeat it, but I don't know.
It was like, so, it was pretty lazy. It's like, I don't know if that's what Nefertiti looked like, but we'll give it to you.
So then we learn that what is about to transpire is the opening scene from the first Mummy movie.
Correct. So good.
I mean, so I honestly think that that was like a good, I feel like they did a good job. They showed us like a different angle of when she's like, my body is no longer his temple. And I think that we learned that that's how Nefertiti dies. She like is so taken by her father being murdered that she like falls off of the balcony.
Yeah, like something happens, like whatever. They
gloss. So then we're snapped out of the flashback by her almost falling off of the boat in the sky and Rick saves her.
Okay, I want to talk about, we need to go back to a Rick saving her moment in the beginning when she gets captured in the beginning of the film and taken and like almost burned alive in a fire because Anaxunamun is just, we find out, like always trying to kill her. In every life, she's trying to kill her. And so Evelyn is tied up with on a board and they're about to throw her into like a fire pit. Rick jumps at the last moment. Rick jumps down. By the way, Rick is in the rafters, like watching all this, just like, like kind of casually delivering lines as one does when they watch their spouse about to be burned alive while a half skeleton, half flesh mummy is like
very casual.
It's just like a casual scene.
Yeah.
And he's just like, oh, that's normal. So although I think he does say like, this would have seemed weird.
Yeah.
That I'm used to this now.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. Whatever. So he catapults her on, like he jumps onto this like plank of wood that they're like throwing into the fire, and he catapults her onto his shoulder and starts running. And that scene made my genitals light up. All of my body lit up. I started ovulating.
Yeah. You might be pregnant now, but so this is the thing. This movie is filled with sexuality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that they really amped up the sex.
They did.
For a reason in this movie.
We needed to be horny the whole time. They were like, didn't make them horny enough last time.
And they were like, these people are all in their early to mid to late teens now. So we need to really expose this. Yeah.
Amp up the
sex. So, and then he runs away with her. He puts her down, and all of a sudden she has a gun and she's like shooting and she's like hitting these people. And Anaximandr is like, fuck off. And
Anaximandr
is also like, beautiful.
Okay, so fucking stunning. And I want to talk about her outfit, because also, what era is this from?
She like went to a night. So you know what it reminds me of is the dress that what's her name wears in the Indiana Jones.
Beaded.
Yeah.
Sort of thing.
It's like a black version of that.
You're right. To me, it also kind of looked like I don't know what the costume designer was trying to do with these looks, because it was like, it's the year 2001. It's like a 2001 outfit designed by Bob Mackie for Cher in the 70s that's supposed to look like it's in the
30s.
It was like very weird. By the
you're
way,
right.
I'm so sorry, dear listeners, if like there's background noise. There's apparently a dog fighting ring that's going
on
outside.
Anything.
Okay, perfect. That's so very loud. So whatever, that outfit was like, all the outfits were strange. The men are in the same thing. Ardeth Bay is always in the same fucking thing.
Same thing.
I think like
looking like a snack though.
No, he's ridiculous. I guess we should probably we're still going to like jump around, so it doesn't really matter. I said, I consider myself a feminist, but I want a man to catapult me onto his shoulders while I'm tied up while a mummy tries to shoot me. Yes.
Listen, I think when you can make your own decisions on what you like, that is feminism.
So, you know, there's another scene where Rick is carrying Alex through at the end where they save their son.
Yeah.
Finally, he throws Alex over his shoulder. And again, I was like, do I want Brendan Fraser to be my dad or to be my daddy?
I know.
Do you know what I'm saying? And Roger Ebert wrote something very funny. He said, in The Mummy Returns, there is a more amazing feat. If the rising sun touches little Alex while he is wearing the magical bracelet, he will die, is written. But Rick, carrying Alex in his arms, is able to outrace the sunrise. We see the line of sunlight moving on the ground right behind them. It is written that the Earth is about 25,000 miles around. And since there are 24 hours in a day, Rick had to have been running approximately 1,041 miles an hour. I love that.
Listen,
so
Roger.
Much.
Listen.
He was, I love Roger.
He was, you idiots. Oh my God. No,
stay
he's dead.
Dead.
I'm sorry. I know. We're not going to rise you with the Book of the Dead.
No, we sure aren't. Not with that attitude. Bitch.
What is the stork? How do you say the stork?
The stork?
You know, when they're like, what's the stork? When they're like reading the spell, like out of the book.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I can't remember. I don't speak Egyptian. I'm so sorry.
I know, neither do I. So something, while we're on the topic of Alex, the boy, I think one of my favorite things about this movie is when Alex accuses Lach Na is his name, that the big black guy, the big handsome black
Lach Na,
guy.
Lach Na, so handsome.
When he has to go to the bathroom and he brings him to the bathroom and he turns around and he's like, you're going to look. He basically accuses this man of pedophilia.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one of this kid knew, he was like, all I need to do is really fucking offend him and I'll be alone. He'll leave
so
me
alone. So smart.
You're
going to look at my little child penis.
Yeah, like, and I love that he's like, and I love that he was like, what? And like,
he's like, no, I'm not.
He's like, what the fuck?
Like, and his friends are like, ew, are you going to look at that kid's dick? And he's like, what? No, I'm definitely not. And they're like,
no,
dude,
I wasn't.
That's really weird. He's like,
I wasn't
at all. I was not looking at little kid's dick. Okay. I have a fan theory that is not backed up by anything other than my brain.
Okay.
Alex is not Rick's child. Alex is the child of Evelyn and Jonathan, and they have an incestuous relationship. Let me tell you why.
Okay, I'm ready.
Let me just tell you why. The attitude of this child leads me to believe that maybe he's not the love child. Maybe he's just spent a lot of time with Jonathan because
they're clearly friends.
They're friends. He just has a very Jonathan attitude.
Totally.
Like he's not really like Evie and he's not really like Rick. He is obviously very smart like his mom, but he's like wily like Jonathan. He doesn't really have any Rick qualities.
No, other than that he can like, no, you're right. He has, what's their last name?
O'Connell?
I forget their last name. No, or like, the other like Jonathan and like her like maiden name. Anyway, I don't know. Carnahan. Yeah, he's more of a Carnahan. And I think that if we ancestry like DNA'd him, it would show that he was more Carnahan.
Okay, that's fair enough.
So that was like, I think that like that was something that I love that he accused this like random stranger of pedophilia.
Love
like
that
knowing
for him.
That he would just, yeah, me too.
On the train, that was a spooky scene. This movie was scarier because when Imhotep does like the sucking of the guys, like sucks up their, like I got scared.
So that was another thing.
Yeah.
In the first movie, that was such a huge thing that he was like finding these men and we didn't even see on camera him sucking. Like taking their he wasn't sucking them on camera. And then in this movie, he just did three in one. Like he wrote it. It was like, speaking of train. I mean, he was basically,
he's like, let me suck all these men.
He was like, I'm going to suck all three of these men in like the next 20 minutes and I'll be rejuvenated. So again, we had like a whole hour of him trying to do that on the first movie. And then in this movie, it was literally a 1 minute scene.
It's so fast. Things in this movie happen so fast.
So I will say you're never bored.
So that was, I think, Roger Ebert's thing was like, you're never bored, but it's like, there's so much happening like at all times that you're like, what? Like, it's like a hot air balloon crash. And then like, they're in this jump. Explain this to me. They go to a land that no man has ever returned from, correct?
Correct. It's the Amshare.
The Amshare. Okay, so
what is
no,
that? Oasis. It's the Oasis.
Okay, the Oasis that the Rock goes into in the beginning of the movie, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So if no man has ever come back, how do they get there? Whatever, I guess
You have to take a hot air balloon, I guess.
Take a hot air balloon. What's that hot air balloon made out of?
It looked an old bladder. Ship and like foreskin. Yeah.
It was like foreskin, right?
It looked
like
foreskin of children. Yeah.
It did. It was like foreskin and an old pirate ship. And the guy driving it was like, what was his name? Lenny in the movie? Did I make that up? It's Lenny Kravitz.
I think you're thinking of Benny.
I thought this guy's name was Lenny.
Maybe
whatever.
It is. I know. I'm having
he's
a hard
great.
Time.
He's great. But he has the hot air balloon. And he's like, no, Colonel, every time I see you, I get shot in the ass.
Yeah. Then he says something about a belly dancer. And Evelyn's like, belly dancer.
She's like, what the fuck? She's like, you mean me in movie number one when I was like, that sick and I looked sick?
She's like, I hope that she was worth it, you asshole.
It was a lot. So anyway, then they end up crashing into the jungle and they're like, okay, you fix this. And he's like, what? How the fuck am I going to fix this goddamn penis ship in the middle of they leave him. They're like, oh, I hope you can figure it out. And
that's
then
the
they
same
go
time that the Falcon gets shot.
Oh my god, Horace gets shot the fuck to death.
It's like carrier Falcon.
This is when Ardeth is like, I have to go, I have to alert my friends, my army, that the second apocalypse is coming. And it's like, when was the first apocalypse?
We weren't told.
We're like, oh, okay, that sounds important. And then Rick is like, my kid. And Ardeth is like, yeah, I guess like one kid is more important
than one idiot kid.
Yeah, we'll save him. So Ardeth is like, oh, okay, fuck it, let's go. And then the jungle, the creepy jungle pygmy mummy.
I wrote Oasis pygmy scene. Ardeth is still the hottest. Saves with guns and saves Rick again. Mm-hmm. So like, I think that they did I actually really like this scene where all of a sudden it's balmy. Like the wind is blowing. It's dark. The grass is blowing. It's creepy. everyone's in one place. They mm-hmm. set up on this high ridge to snipe people to mm-hmm. save Rick.
They do.
All of a sudden, these you're like closing in on these pygmy faces. For some reason, I think pygmy is not,
appropriate,
but I don't know.
That's what they're referred to.
That's what they're referred to. And like, please DM us and
but also they are, this is like when people got upset that the Little Mermaid is now, for the live action movie, is a black Little Mermaid.
Right.
It's a mythical character. So
correct.
She can be any color she wants to be. These are made up. These aren't real. So I don't want to insult anybody by calling them
pygmies. Characters or creatures. Yeah
they're CGI, but we're not trying to be offensive to them. So
no, right. So
don't cancel
anyway,
us
so
over this.
Over like our second one in. So anyway, so these small indigenous mummies. You're
first,
closing
first oasisers. Maybe that's what they are.
First oasis. Native oasisers.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
You're closing in on one of their heads because like they're looking at it and they're like, what the fuck is that? And in a truly heart-stopping, frightening moment, it comes to life and leaps toward the camera and makes you piss your pants.
Okay. The thing about that leap is they left you hanging for so long before, like, you're like, it's going to leap. It's going to leap.
It was like the, is it gonna the leap? Timing of that was like so brilliant.
It was 30 seconds long.
And you're like, and then all of a sudden, and then it jumps to you and you basically die for a moment.
Yeah, it's very scary. And it's like, they're just like shrunken heads in this oasis.
And then Loch Nah, the guard for Alex O'Connell, is like, well, now I'm just going to kill this kid because now mm-hmm. shit's hitting the fan. I'm just going to kill him. And Rick sweeps in at the last moment. Evelyn is up on this cliff, just sniping people, taking people down. Because she's like, Jonathan.
She's Lisa Vanderpump, sniper from the side.
Exactly. And she is like murdering these people. And she knows exactly how to use this gun, exactly where to aim.
She is a sharpshooter.
A sharpshooter that we didn't know about.
I would have shot, like, whenever there's a battle scene, I'm always like, how are people not shooting like their friends by accident?
I know.
Like, shoot my friend. I'd be like, oh my God.
I know. I'm sorry. I make them sign a waiver. I know. Yeah, so
like, I don't know what I'm doing in this battle. I'm sorry.
So then we see Ardith fighting Loch Nah again in one of the hottest battle scenes.
Oh my God.
On television, on mm-hmm. movie theaters, whatever. Mm-hmm. These two men are so strong, and these like swords they're wielding are just like huge and they're clashing. Beating the shit out of each other.
It's so hot.
And then Ardith, in a dumb move, you know, defeats this guy, right? But then within 1 second, someone from the background puts a gun to his back.
Yep.
And the screen, like, the viewer is like, fuck.
And it goes, and you hear a shot.
And so then you hear like, a shot and you're like, oh, motherfuck. No, and then you look up and Jonathan has saved this man. And he gives this like nod to the camera, like, yeah, fuck yeah.
I did that. And then they're
and
like,
Ardith
right,
is attracted to Jonathan in that moment. So
again, that's very true. Your sexuality is played with in this film. Do you like men? Do you like women? Do you like Jonathan?
Don't go into these movies with any sort of pre-existing sexuality.
No, it's going to challenge everything you know about.
It will challenge everything you know about yourself, your penis, your vagina.
Whatever you have, it's going to
whatever you have or want to have, it's going to change what you think about it.
It really does. I mean, these movies were sexually charged. Okay. So now we're getting, they're rescuing the kid and the kid, they're like, let's go home. And he's like, I got to get this bracelet off before I die.
It's like 1 second, guys.
So that's when they run. Rick apparently runs 1,000 miles an hour, chase it into the mm-hmm. temple. The Scorpion King comes, blah, blah, blah. We don't need to like get.
They literally. Well, so then they breathe a sigh of relief and Anoxinamune like shanks the shit out of Evelyn.
Just walks up and stabs her. And then Anoxinamune gives the best fucking look to Alex, the kid.
She waves. She's like, killed your mom, motherfucker.
Oh, your mom's dead. And so.
Oh, your mom's dead?
Oh my God. Is your mom dead? She is. Bye.
Oh my God. And then they go through this scene where like, I cried, seen this movie a million times for some reason I cried at this moment for the first time. And then
I wrote down, she serves us. Evelyn's death serves us a one Lisa Rinna at the reunion Easter Bunny tier. One.
So the only thing she manages to say is take care of Alex.
I mean, you just gave me chills.
As if Rick wasn't going to take care of his child. Anyway, so then.
But he kind of doesn't. He's like, okay, I got to go.
He doesn't. He runs into the temple with a vengeance. He's like,
a vengeance.
Oh, hell no. He's like, I did not leave the South Side for this.
He did not. And he's like, I've got to go do some shit now. How does Ardith get back to the desert to fight the army of Anubis? Is that explained or did he just kind of like walk there?
I think he just probably like, you know what?
He's just there.
That's something that I didn't notice. He would have had to again run 1,000 miles an hour to get to this.
Yeah,
location.
Like how did he get there so fast? Because he's in a hidden magical oasis, and now he's like in the desert again. Like the
with
geography
millions
of the
of
movie
people.
Makes like no sense. Yeah, so he has like all these.
But
people,
we also don't care.
We also don't care. And then so the whole point of this movie is like you got to stop the army of Anubis, which is. Mm-hmm. Just these really scary, like, dog zombies.
With male giant bodies.
Giant male bodies, dog zombie, skeleton army. It's very scary. Yeah. I kind of, like, they had
it's
me
horrifying.
Shook.
They it's
had me
horrifying.
Scared.
So, back at the Oasis, Jonathan and Alex are crying. And Jonathan says something like it says in the good book. And without skipping a beat, Alex goes, the book.
The book.
And he rises Evelyn from the dead.
Of course, easy.
Because he wants his mommy back. And Jonathan is being attacked by an Anaxunamun. And
another sexy battle scene, by the way.
We're about to get to the sexiest fucking battle scene in cinematic history. So Anaxunamun's about to stab Jonathan, and Evelyn's hand grabs her arm and she goes, why don't you pick on someone your own size? Like, she made that line up, I think. No one's ever said that.
She did. She coined it.
She coined that line.
That line didn't exist before her.
Nope. And so all of a sudden, they're looking at each other with these like beautiful fucking daggers in their hands. They're like circling each other. And she goes, Nefertiti. And she goes, Anaxunamun. And then they just start fucking going at it. And I've never, ever been turned on by anything more in my life.
My nipples, I'm not kidding, are hard right now thinking about the scene. It is.
I can't so stand good. Up.
No,
so it's
don't.
Like.
Please don't.
I have watched that scene like 7 million times. And anytime anyone says the word mummy, I'm like, have you seen the scene in The Mummy Returns? It's like,
have you seen?
I wanted to learn how to knife fight because of that scene.
It looks so good. And I know that you have brought up the stunt coordinator before right now, but like the fight scenes are really beautifully choreographed, especially the women's fight scenes.
Yeah. And
they're
then
beautiful.
They're so good. And like their bodies are moving so elegantly and like quickly.
So
and
elegant. I would never, I don't like, have the agility yet. Their agility makes me so jealous.
No, they're like spinning and turning and ducking and jumping. And then she slices. She gives her like beautiful cartwheel. And then she gives her like a little teeny slice on her cheek. And Anaxunamun was like, fuck this shit. And then she runs away.
Yeah, that was like very funny to me. She's like, oh, I got nicked. And
she's like, what the fuck?
And she takes off. I guess because she's like, oh my God, I'm mortal. Is that like, maybe that was the
oh, you know
the
what?
Thought?
Maybe that's why.
Maybe
because,
she's like,
yeah,
oh
yeah,
shit,
yeah.
What the, I can die.
Like, what the
so
fuck?
She
yeah.
runs in and then we get the next three-way fight scene between Rick.
Between
Imhotep. And a lobster.
Now it's 2001, guys. Now let me just, let me give you some sort of like reference of time. Like, Jurassic Park, one of the best movies in history, came out in 1997. Sure. And we never for one second doubted that those dinosaurs weren't real.
No, incredible.
That CGI was the best thing I've ever seen in my life in
incredible.
1997.
Incredible.
We are 4 years later.
And it's the
this
worst.
CGI, it literally looks like somebody copy and pasted a lobster with the rocks like weird drawn
like a
face.
Like a fan art of the lobster from someone that like can't draw that well. And
it was the weirdest.
It was like, remember in like Lara Croft Tomb Raider video game when she has like square tits?
Yeah.
It's like, it was like that level of graphics.
It
like,
was
made no sense.
Also, and like the character of the Scorpion King made no sense.
Why did he turn into a half scorpion, half man? Was that necessary? It seems not necessary.
It just like nothing the
and then
fucking weird.
And then I've been teaching my son Rex about blame, which he still doesn't really understand. He thinks it's just like lying. So he just like, he's like, I'm going to go pee. No, I didn't pee. You peed. I'm like, that's not blame. I'm going to tie this into the scene and you're going to find out how right now. So this the Scorpion King needs to be, Imhotep wants to kill the Scorpion King and take over the army. When the Scorpion King comes to like kill him, he's like, oh, I'm your servant. I'm your servant. He's trying to kill you though. Oh, he came here to kill you. And Rick's like, you're what? Right. Like, what are they talking about? Because he doesn't speak, you know, ancient Egyptian. Right. And so he like gets like the Scorpion King like leaves him alone. And so some shit goes down. I can't really remember because I was very high when I was watching this scene.
It's just like a weird, I mean, it's like the same. It's probably the same like for everybody.
It was like so much fire. It was really like being on a ride at Universal, like the earthquake ride.
There's like weird fireballs coming out.
Yeah, there's like so many fireballs everywhere. And then we already talked about this when like everybody's about to die and Rachel Weisz saves him and Anaximandr leaves. Anaximandr falls into a beetle pit, ripped apart.
The scarabs get her.
Yep. They get her. And like, what else happens? Nothing.
Anything? So basically, like, then the pyramid starts to collapse. They have to obviously run away again. They get to the top of the pyramid. They're saved by the foreskin balloon. And then we get a kiss. We get another soft, tender, beautiful kiss.
Okay, I have a couple questions for you.
Okay.
I wrote Imhotep ringing the gong really made me laugh. He's like, I guess he has to awaken the Scorpion King.
Do you watch Downton Abbey?
Like, I've watched a couple of episodes.
Okay, then, I mean, it's fine. There's like bells. A gong in that show. They ring a gong when it's dinner time. And that's what it reminds me of.
I don't understand that. Okay, question for you. Have you ever been in a fight?
No, one time at a bar, someone called my sister a bitch, and I knew that I had to at least pretend to try to fight this person.
I would have been like, she is.
So I was ready to fight someone, but it didn't happen.
What did you do? Were you like square up?
I like don't know. I don't know how it got.
Did you take out your like two daggers? Like Evelyn?
I was like, whoosh. Yeah. And then I just, yeah. And then obviously the guy was like, what the fuck? I know how this ends. You're going to like slice my cheek.
I'm running away.
So yeah, I honestly don't remember how that moment ended, but I didn't ever fight. No, I've never like had a physical altercation with someone.
I would be so scared. People in movies are like never scared to fight.
One of my employees came into work the other day with a black eye. And I was like, you got into a fight? And he was like, yeah.
Like casual?
Yeah. I was like, are you okay? Like, do you need, it's weird. Yeah.
Wow.
It was, I know. And to him, it was normal, but
that's, I would be traumatized for life. Okay.
I know. I remember. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
A follow-up question for you is when there's like a giant fight scene going on, when the army of Anubis was fighting Ardeth Bay and all of his little buccaneer people, do you ever like pick like a one portion to focus on of like a fight scene to like see if like the animators like did a good job in that one section? I always do that.
I do. This movie, but no, you're right. Yeah. I do that. Like to test them. Like, oh, you're not a good animator.
Yeah. I'm like, who worked on this section?
It's like when you're watching the Olympics with like a bag of chips.
Yeah.
And like your gut hanging over your underwear and you're like, idiot.
Oh my God. I'm like, well, I'm like, ew, her dress is so gross. Like watching the Golden Globe.
They like
and I'm
trip. Like,
I'm like, yeah, in stained sweatpants.
An Olympian like steps 1 centimeter out of line and you're like, what a fucking idiot.
You're like, oh, loser.
Yeah.
Want to hear something so loserish today? You can describe to the audience what I'm wearing, but if you can't really see, I'm wearing like a ratty sweatshirt. I'm wearing pilled Lululemon pants. My hair is a disaster. And I have, I did get it cut yesterday, but it's like, it looks like Sophia Petrillo from the Golden Girls for a few days when I first get it cut.
Wow.
And I'm wearing
like a sexy Sophia Petrillo. Like that's like your Halloween costume.
Thank
like
you so much.
Sexy Sophia. Yeah.
Thank you so much. And I was also wearing just like dirty flip-flops. I get to my son's school today and I drop him off. And the lady says, oh, I love your style. And I say, oh my gosh, like stop. Like it's such like an old sweatshirt. Like, and she looks at me and she goes, oh no, I was talking to Rex. Like, why would she have been talking to me? I look.
You're like,
disgusting.
First of all, bitch,
like
I dressed him. So that is my style.
Paul dressed him. My husband dressed him.
So sorry. Guys, I met Paul like before this via Zoom.
He's cute. Oh, you saw him topless.
I saw he had no blouse on. So like it was a lot. It was a lot for me. And I don't think anyone knows how lucky Sloan is, but.
That's very sweet. I'm very lucky. He's a very sexy man. He just walks around here with no top on. Like he's, I feel like I have my own Ardeth Bay, to be honest with you.
You do. It's Ardeth Bay and Mark Consuelos had a love child.
You know, I never thought I loved. Oh my God. I just had, oh, did you see my face? Yes. Okay. Our bug spray man is here and he just walked past like the side yard and it was, he has like a huge turban on. So I just like, I thought it was just very mummy-ish. I got really scared for a second.
It was, imagine we conjured the mummy by accident.
I am not the shock of my life.
I wouldn't survive. I know.
Okay. Okay. That actually is my last question for you.
Okay. Okay.
In these disaster movies, people's, or like whatever, disaster movie, horror movie, mm-hmm. people's will to survive is so strong.
It's so strong. And I already know
I would just die.
There are so many times where I was like, where I would be like, I would just let them kill me. Like,
yeah. Be like, this is not.
This is not worth it. I'm going to be traumatized for the rest of my life, even if I make it out of this. Like I was traumatized by having to sit in my house for 3 months.
I like, loved it.
I thought I was going to love it, but now I see I get like notifications that like, oh, you posted this picture a year ago. And I'll like look at the picture and like freak and like my body like shuts down. I'm like, what the fuck was I doing a year ago?
I was baking bread.
We were all making bread. It was like
all making bread.
Well, we acted like we needed to like make bread out of a kiln and like milk. Like we were.
Paul bought me a book on homesteading. I live in Miami, Florida. He bought me a book on how to homestead. I was like, we're going to be pickling beets.
Oh my God. I honestly, that was like, we were bizarre humans last year at this point. Like
no one knew how to act.
Was missing. We all had to make sourdough because yeast was sold out everywhere.
Okay.
In Rhode Island, at least.
Zach, I tweeted or not tweeted. I like Instagrammed like Fleischmann's and Red Star and all these baking companies. And I was like, please, some yeast for my bread.
We need yeast.
They sent me yeast and they literally sent a note. Oh, they
I
were
remember
like,
this
is all like in the note. They were like, this is like all we have to give to like people.
You
right
shouldn't
now.
Have even posted that because people probably, you were like,
my house
Marie
was broken
Antoinette.
Into. No, I
That's
was.
That's what I mean.
I, yeah. What? I felt like Marie Antoinette. You know, I have a Marie Antoinette tattoo.
They're okay. So guys, now that is not the first coincidence that
let's talk.
Sloan and I have been like riddled with coincidence since okay, we weird. Started deciding that we needed to do this podcast.
Mm-hmm. Today's so, was very weird.
I don't know if everyone, if anyone else has CoStar, but we both have CoStar and we're friends on it. Friend us on CoStar. And my Please. Things today said, practice your tenderness with Sloan Steele. And Sloan responded by saying that the song that she was playing in her home was Try a Little Tenderness.
My son's favorite song. He was, when you sent that to me, Paul and Rex were dancing to Try a Little Tenderness.
Topless.
Topless. I mean, Rex was naked. Paul was topless. We live in like a very naked house. I'm always this dressed, like, but everybody else is naked. It was weird, but like we do have like a lot of like weird quinky dinks.
It's weird. I know. I hope they keep happening. An angel reader once told me that when you have coincidences, it just means it's someone reminding you that you're on the right path.
Oh my God. I love that. It's so beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, so. I feel like it's so beautiful and natural on this podcast. We have so much to talk about. I mean, we are talking about the mummy, but I feel
it's not going to stop here.
It's not going to stop here. We have so much to say.
We have so much to say.
And so
we haven't even gotten into the Wise potato chips, but
have you ever eaten them?
Never.
Okay. Are you going to get a bag?
I think I should now.
What Why don't we do did a you taste get test? One? No, I didn't. Okay, so, I didn't. We should do a taste test next episode.
Okay.
Someone told me to live. Try the, yes. Well, on our live show, when
we'll
we do
a
our
clubhouse of taste tests.
Oh my God.
Chips.
When we do a stadium tour for the Mummy podcast,
Everyone gets a bag.
I mean, we could probably afford it.
Oh,
like
yeah,
10
for
cents.
Sure. Yeah.
So someone said the salt and vinegar is life-changing. Okay, we'll see.
So I remember like my grandmother sometimes having them in her house. And I think that I remember them just being very thin and like wafy.
Oily?
Oil. It's like a oiled crisp.
I don't like that.
Me neither.
Like I like a Lay's potato chip, but sometimes even then I'm like, oh, this is really oily.
In my old age, you guys, I just turned 35 like last week and I really enjoy a lightly salted or no salt added chip.
Oh my God, you're really old.
I'm so like, Do you guys have Utz potato chips?
Or
is that a New England? Okay.
No, we do.
So I'm like really into a no salt added Utz plain potato chip.
That is.
It's like literally Nana.
That's like, yeah, that's like, oh, your pops is on a low sodium diet and this is the chip we have in the house.
I've on my 15th heart attack and I just need to have these no salt added. Yeah.
I mean, I'm kind of like into that.
But guys, like if you want to, there's a tortilla, Tostitos makes a no salt tortilla chip. And I think that it's
just corn flavor.
It tastes. Yeah. And I love it. I don't know why. When you dip that in a salty guac.
Oh, okay. I can see what's going on. It's just that, you know what I love about, and this is probably where we should end our show.
I feel like we should, because unless we're going to get sponsored by Tostitos.
I mean, I'm ready and willing. Yeah, the thing I love about a Tostitos, I like the thin, like restaurant style ones.
Oh, me too.
The salt is so fine. It's almost like the sand on the set of the Mummy.
To digress back to the Mummy.
I mean, but it is. It's like the finest salt.
It is. And then you don't even know it's there. So you're like, oh, this doesn't have a lot of salt. And you put it in your mouth and all of a sudden your uvula is burning.
Oh my God. All of a sudden your tongue is like, I have so many cuts. I have so many cuts on my tongue.
It's like when you put hand sanitizer on your hands and all of a sudden you realize you have cuts all over your hands.
I thought you were going to say in your mouth, which I was like, you're not supposed to be.
During COVID, like we were, the president told us to drink bleach. So I just was like having a bleach cocktail every night.
The next best thing I have is this like hand sanitizer.
The leader of the free country was like, drink bleach.
That was dark. We almost didn't make it through that, but we did. We came out the other side. Oh my God. That was tough. Well, guys, this has been the Mummy Returns. I'm glad you all returned.
I'm glad everyone returned or is listening for the first time.
Whatever happens, happens.
Should we do like, where can they find you?
Yeah, they can find, if you want to find me, my address is, I'm just kidding. If you want to find me, such a stupid joke. Why did you even laugh? It was a pity laugh.
No, that was like a real laugh. But.
Okay. If you want to find me, my Instagram is at I am Sloan Steele. My Twitter is at Sloan Steele. My other Instagram is at Oh My Erotica. And I think that's all I have. I guess you can find me on Facebook. I'm not going to answer you.
Mine is just Zach Mellon, and that's all I've got.
Do you want to spell it? We have to spell it.
Sure. It's Zach Mellen.
That's perfect.
DM me all the wrong things that I said.
DM him. If you were a part of the Mummy cast, please reach out to us.
Anyone wants to help us in any way, like all you have to do is just tag every Mummy cast member.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Send them the podcast.
Show them what we're doing. If you know Rachel Weitsch, tell her that I say hi. Send her this podcast, please.
Yep. We'll do a follow-up. We'll do follow-up episodes with the cast.
Yeah. And just because we said we're not going to talk about the Mummy anymore doesn't mean we can't talk about the Mummy again. So if you have questions,
I'm sure it'll come up, because I do think there is like, they do cast like a pretty attractive young man to be. So do you know that the third Mummy takes place like 10 years later?
No, I guess.
So it takes place 10 years later. And there's like a 21-year-old Alex who's kind of one of the main characters. Yeah.
Okay. I haven't seen the Mummy 3 literally in so long. Maybe we'll do it. Maybe we won't. We'll decide.
We'll test the waters. We'll see the temperature of the fans.
We're going to, these podcasts will be out in the next couple of weeks. So, I mean, sorry, they will be out this week.
Like they'll be out by September, October.
Like, I don't even know why I'm saying they'll
like
be out
in a couple joggers.
Weeks. Oh my God. This is the She by Sheree of podcasts. Like,
guys, and I'm not going to like, I'm going to say like, if there's a really good episode of a Housewives, like there's a chance we'll talk about it. Like,
we should cover Sheree's fashion show.
We should cover Sheree's fashion show.
This is
the New York Housewives just released a trailer.
Oh my God. Okay. We have to do a different.
We don't have time.
We don't have time. But this is like, because I have not released this podcast yet, this is like Sheree's fashion show. It's like a podcast with no episodes. How dreadful. That's what I'm doing.
When are the clothes coming out? Spring, summer, September.
You guys are going to listen to this week, and that's the end.
You know what? Who's going to check us, boo?
Who going to check me, boo? Who going to check me, boo? Let's actually end on this, because I think this will tie it all up. And this is a question I asked my two very good girlfriends last night.
Okay.
What is the Housewives tagline, or like a Housewives line? you think about the most, that you say to yourself the most?
Oh my gosh, that is such a good question. So I guess I would say, because I think it's the worst tagline in history. And like, I don't remember the first half of it, but I add this on to a lot, like a lot of things that people say. I go, at least I'm pretty, because Kristen Takeman, and I don't know what season it was of the New York Housewives, just said something like, I don't know. And then she goes, but at least I'm pretty. And I am really proud of this because I have a friend who's always like kind of, she's one of my best friends. And I made her tagline, like her tagline is perpetually, my friends might want to do uppers, but I'm a natural downer.
That's the best tagline ever. That's so good. So I love that. All right. Yeah. Well, I'm going to end this with my favorite line, which could also just apply also to the characters, the scary characters of the mummy. And it's a line that Elaine says at the infamous, let's not talk about the husband dinner, when she just says, beast. Because Kim Richards calls her a beast.
You beast, yeah.
Beast?
How dare you?
Beast. So anyway, you guys, we are going to start calling you our beasts.
Our beasts.
Oh, our listeners, so our beasts. You guys are our beasties. It's like our besties, but also our beasties.
Our beasties.
Okay, beasties. So
thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you guys so much. We love you so much. And we'll TTYL.
He beats Setna. Bye.
And then the song's going to play over this.
Unseen.
Thanks for listening to the Mummy Dearest podcast. See you next time. And remember, don't read from the Book of the Dead.